Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Guess who's back? You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And additionally, me, Ian Morris.
And brought to you once again by you. Thank you to our beloved patrons who have supported us and stuck with us every week over our summer break. Obviously, you've not been charged for anything, so we've not put anything out. But thanks for still being here, most of you. If you are a patron, this obviously is your extended cut of this week's glorious return of a show. If you're not yet a patron but would like to get our extended cuts, weekly columns and more, then head to patreon.com/uktech. There's a link in the show notes and in the MP3 description to find out how you can support us. Very, very low cost, no commitment. And obviously, as we move into our sort of new season, any experiments with supporting us would be very much appreciated. Ian, we've been gone for a while over the summer. The hot, beautiful, yep. Not at all raining summer here in Great Britain that we have as our homeland. How have you been? I mean, I know. Let's pretend I don't know, because as well, if I haven't seen you several times.
We speak, don't we? I've been good, mate. Yeah, it's good. We've recently been having some people talk to us on Twitter saying, "When are you guys coming back? We miss you," which is lovely, and we really like that.
And you have to, no worries at all. You know, we're very much like, like a cold sore or what's that STI that you can't cure?
I don't know. Is it herpes? Gonorrhea?
Herpes. Yeah, we're sort of like that in that we might go away for a bit, but yes. We'll never be actually gone. We'll always come back. That's the Nate Langson promise. We brought it back now, despite the fact that in 3 weeks I'm getting married.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't ideal timing, is it? But it's worth having a crack at it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we've got another 3 weeks we'll do then. There'll be probably a couple of weeks when I'm away because I'm getting married. Ian, for those of you who don't know, is one of my groomsmen as well, so he can't really do the show on his own. And
going on the honeymoon with you, so...
No, that's true. No, Ian's job begins and ends on the wedding day. Everything after that I'll take care of. And then we'll be back, you know, properly every week from then on. Now, there is something that I must just point out. If any of you are wondering if I sound a little different, there are two reasons for this. The first reason is because we have a beautiful new microphone here in my studio here, except that I don't have the beautiful new cable required to plug it in to my mixing desk. It is an oversight. Some would call it a rookie error. Some would have said I would have tried to find it more than 10 minutes before Ian and I started recording, but we've been off for 2 months. What do you expect? But don't worry, that will be sorted by next week because the cable will come tomorrow, all being well. However, the other reason I might sound a little bit different is because apparently I had laryngitis while I was off. It's taking its sweet time to go away. It's been a few weeks now, and I sound a bit like a heavy smoker, despite the fact that I don't smoke. So hopefully that will dissipate, you know, over the coming weeks. But do excuse any cracks in my voice. Shall we get on with some news, Chief?
Yes.
Well, we're going to start this week's news, perhaps slightly predictably, by talking about some of the stuff Apple announced this year. As some of you all know, in the past, we often skip some of the big keynotes and announcements from Apple and Google and Samsung, simply because everybody covers them, and there's very rarely sort of a very UK-specific angle to talk about. But actually, this year, there's been quite a lot of UK-specific stuff that we can talk about with what Apple announced. And we're actually going to start by talking about the Apple TV, the 4K model that was announced. The reason we wanted to talk about that is because it's going to cost £179. Which makes it one of the most expensive streaming boxes on the market here. It's certainly more expensive than the Rokus, I believe. It's more expensive than the Amazon Fire Stick. Although, did they kill that? I can't remember.
No, the Fire Stick's still available, but that's a low end product.
It's a low end product. It's a premium price. You know, you're paying for it. But there are some other interesting things happening for the UK that's with the Apple TV, the 4K. Firstly, it's getting ITV and Channel 5 joining the native supported apps, which means that it joins, I think Sky News is on there. BBC iPlayer has been on there for some time. On the newest Apple TV, at least, iPlayer is on. I don't think it's on the older ones. So the UK is actually getting quite a lot out of Apple TV-wise with this new model. And the other thing that the UK is going to get, apparently later this year, date hasn't been fully announced, is the Apple TV app, not to be confused with an app about Apple TV, like the remote. This is the thing that they announced at their previous keynote for the US, which is kind of it's sort of a hub, isn't it, mate, for all the TV shows and movies that you have across both Apple and other apps on your Apple TV. It's sort of like, go to this place to stream all this stuff, and all your, you know, sync points and favorites and stuff will sync across all of your Apple devices.
You know, it's really a product that's exclusively for people who really, really use Apple stuff a lot.
Yeah. Well, the TV or the Apple TV app.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. The app, really. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, Apple TV is entirely set up, isn't it, for absolutely everything being an Apple thing.
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely. But the other thing that I think is very exciting was, obviously, it's 4K. I have a 4K TV, and I don't have a great deal of 4K content to watch on it, which is frustrating. So this for me is extremely exciting, because in addition to it supporting 4K, it will also upgrade any shows that you've already bought. Well, I say shows, I mean movies. We actually don't know yet if it includes TV shows that have been shot in 4K. But it will upgrade anything that is available in 4K to 4K if you've bought it already, you know, for no upgrade charge, which is really interesting. And it goes against, you know, a little bit of a precedent that Apple set for its digital stores a number of years ago when they rolled out iTunes Plus. For those of you who remember this, they got rid of the DRM on the files, the rights management stuff, but they also increased the bit rate, the sound quality, from 128 kilobits per second to 256 kilobits per second. It was an enormous jump, but to begin with, you had to pay to upgrade those files or albums individually.
You did it, didn't you?
I did it for a lot of them, yeah, and ultimately it annoyed me quite a bit because they eventually just upgraded everything and, you know, I didn't get a refund, but hey-ho.
Could you have asked for a refund, do you think?
I doubt it. But with this, it's irrelevant because they're not doing that. So I think that's great, because it's definitely the kind of thing that if Apple even didn't want to do, the movie studio certainly would probably want to do, because they love getting you to buy things twice. But they're not. And for 4K HDR stuff to be priced at the same price as HD is, I think, going to be a game changer for 4K content sales, because, you know, right now, whether you get stuff legitimately or illegitimately, or you shell out for a 4K Blu-ray player or something, it's actually quite difficult to get 4K. I think this is going to be very, very interesting, and you know, very excited that we're in the UK going to get quite a lot of this stuff all at once.
Yeah, but like you, there was a time when I was sort of, I couldn't wait to get HD. I was beside myself waiting for HD. It took so long in this country. But 4K, I don't feel the same way about. I mean, there is a lot of things I'm excited about with 4K, but at the same time, I'm just sort of thinking, I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
And I've got an ultra wide monitor, so sometimes 4K stuff would look good on that. But you try getting 4K content on a PC, not very easy.
No, it's difficult. I mean, gaming is quite good. Yep. I play Fallout 4. My fiance Kate and I play Fallout 4 together, and we have that wired into the TV and have the Xbox One controller, you know, wired into the PC. So we sit on the sofa and play that in 4K. You know, which is very nice on a 65-inch screen, I have to say. But it's part of the reason that I wanted to do it that way was just so I had something to justify the money I spent on that TV. So, you know, this will be great. I can definitely see myself spending, you know, a fair amount of money on movies and things if they're in 4K. Certainly for a while, until the novelty wears off. But let us know if you will be listeners, of course, podcast@natelangson.com. If you're going to buy one, that would be great to hear, and why. Let's talk about another thing that happened with Apple this week. The Apple Watch Series 3 with 4G. Now, that's going to start at £400 in the UK, which is an enormous amount of money for, you know, a product like this. You know, it's very predictable of Apple to charge something like that, and people will undoubtedly pay it. But unlike the US, we only have one choice of network to use it on, EE. Yeah. Now, EE is the biggest network, but at the moment, it doesn't include the other big ones, O2, Vodafone, and Three. We also don't know, I believe, if it works on BT Mobile. I don't believe it does. BT Mobile is owned by EE and uses the same network, but the same back-end network. But at the moment, we believe it's only EE, whereas in the US, all four major American networks will have it. So, you know.
And also the don't forget PlusNet, which is also a BT EE thing. I wanted to just say, actually, I suppose it doesn't really matter. The only reason it would matter was if you were looking to get a better price, because obviously EE can charge what it wants if it's the exclusive partner, which is why they want to be the exclusive partner, I guess. I think it's not very expensive, is it? I believe it's is it a £5 or something like that? Did you?
£5 for what?
£5 a month or something for a watch. Service plan for EE. I think that's what I saw.
I didn't see the prices actually for the service plans. That's interesting. I'd only seen the prices for the model itself. But
hold on, I'll ask Google.
It doesn't surprise me. Well, while Ian checks that out live in real time for you, I thought I'd point out one other thing, which is that initially we thought this was a big exclusive deal. You know, like EE nailed the exclusive for the Apple Watch in the same way that O2 nailed the iPhone for 2 years when that first came out in the UK. But one of my colleagues and I at Bloomberg looked into this, and actually it's not an exclusive at all. It's just that EE was the only network prepared to invest in upgrading and changing its network in order to support the technology that the watch necessitates a network has, i.e. the ability to basically have two separate cellular devices sharing the same number and being aware of each other. That's something that you can't do without a network getting on board and saying, yes, we're going to support it. So it looked like EE had nailed this exclusive partnership with Apple, but they haven't. It's they're just the ones who did it first.
I'm with you, but I mean that's sort of confusing in a way, because I wasn't. I mean, I haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about the Apple Watch. I really like it. I really want one. I don't think I'm going to buy one because I just think I'd rather I'd rather pay that £400 towards the iPhone X or 10, sorry. I also don't necessarily think you need to have it on the same network as you would have a phone, for example. But
saying
that, so it shares a number with your phone. So if you've got an EE phone and the Apple Watch, you can use the same number. Is that what you're saying?
Well, but here's the use case. This is what I think is going to be the absolute ideal use case scenario. And this is based on the fact that Apple's released some figures for the battery in the Apple Watch, which is it's going to have 1 hour of talk time and 4 hours of GPS, i.e. you've got a mapping app open, it's tracking your run, and you're doing that with 4G. So you're at home, you're preparing for a run, you don't want to take your phone, so you put your phone down, you put in your wireless AirPods, you press play on some music on your watch. That's what that music's going to stream from the cloud over the 4G network to your watch and send that wirelessly to your wireless headphones. Then you're going to go out for a run and the map and your fitness tracker application is going to track your location with GPS, log it to whatever services you're using while you're on the go. And if you happen to get a call while you're away from your phone, your watch will ring. You can have a quick chat, say, hey, I'm out for a run, call me later or something like that. And then when you get back home, it restores the phone number back to your phone and you presumably put your watch on charge because it'll be probably quite low battery by that point. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, what Apple's going for with this. And I think for that market, this product is unique. You know, the Samsung Gear S3 was released last year and that did have a similar embedded SIM chip inside it, but it also required, you know, a separate contract or I don't believe it could share the same number on as your phone. So it was, it wasn't quite the same seamless experience, but it was also a lot cheaper. So you're paying the Apple premium for you know, what it's, Apple does.
It's £5 a month, but you have to be an existing EE customer. For as far as I know, there's no technical reason you can't have as many phones as you want on one number. I think the reason they don't do it is so that the whole country isn't just using one mobile phone contract, just sharing out phones. But I think technically it's certainly possible to have all the things. I mean, it might cause problems when you answer a call altogether. But at the same time, I don't understand why it needs to work like this. Given that, you know, if you leave your Apple phone, your iPhone at home, you go out for a run in your use example, and you know people could call your phone, and you could just have the phone. The Apple could write the software to have the phone divert the call to your watch. I mean, again, it might be more complicated than that, but I kind of feel like this is being sort of sold as a this is the only way we can do it kind of thing. You have to have a phone contract and you have to pay this £5 extra. I don't really understand why you have to pay any extra, really, apart from the fact it does add a little bit of a load to the network.
But yeah, because big phone company.
Sure. But it, really, all it's doing is you're using probably your own data pack, I would imagine. So, you know, I know you're not going to be transferring a huge amount of data anyway, because the watch only has a certain amount of capacity on it. Mm. While you may perhaps listen to Apple Music on it, you can still only sync, what is it, 4 gigs of music to the thing.
Yeah, you can sync a few gig, but that is if you're syncing locally. You can stream as your entire music library.
Right, sure, okay. But I mean, okay, fine. I don't want to criticize EE too much for it, because I understand that it wasn't exactly nothing to implement the system. Having said that, Mac Rumors also says that a reader contacted O2 support and it was confirmed to him that O2 will be supporting it, although no date was given.
Yeah, and I think we'll see that from other networks as well. And the reason is they're biding their time, I think. You know, they're biding their time to see what the adoption is going to be like and whether it's worth making that investment. But I think what may well happen is we'll see other products come out on EE that take advantage of this kind of technology. And maybe that will be the impetus that gets the other networks to start competing and offer the service. And ultimately, I think that price, that additional price to connect a wearable will actually disappear, because once the competition is in place, there's a competitive incentive to saying, we won't charge you to use your watch on your phone contract. And I think competition will bring that down, which again will probably increase adoption. So this is likely the way that it's going
to
go.
I love the idea of it. I think it's a really good idea to have something on your wrist that's able to communicate, even if it's not doing it all the time. But the idea that you can sort of send backups of, you know, walking data and all that kind of stuff. Also, it'll be a big thing for parents. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that parents want to be spending £400 on a watch for their kids. But if you were worried about your child, you know, and you want to know where they are, that's probably not a bad way of, you know, keeping tabs on them. You give them your watch, whatever, say, OK, off you go to play. I'll call you on the watch when, you know, dinner's ready or something like that. And it gives parents a bit of peace of mind.
Let us know if you're planning on buying one of the new Apple Watches with 4G and why you're buying it. That's more interesting than the fact that you are buying it. You know, it's the why are you buying it? What do you think you're going to do with it that's worth £400? For me, I would like to strap one to my cat because it's light enough to put around his neck.
Same.
And just see where he gets up to when I let him out. You know,
yep,
the answer is not very far at all. But if you were, you know, worried about a new cat going outside for the first time, you know, maybe it's worth strapping a £400 smartwatch to its neck.
You can
for peace
get
of mind.
Products that cost a lot less than £400.
I know you
exactly
can, but
that.
What self-respecting cat wants to wear one of those? They're big and heavy. They look stupid. I wrote about one for CNET about 10 years ago. It was like a camera that you strapped around its neck. And my poor cat Socks, bless his now deceased heart, he looked like a prat.
Yes.
You know, he didn't look dignified. He looked like he was, you know, very, very cross indeed, actually. Whereas the Apple Watch, you know, I can imagine my cat Robin looking, you know, rather nice in that. But who knows? It's going to be a debate with Kate and I whether we spend that money. But let us know if you're going to spend that money. podcast@natelangson.com. Last up, just before we move away from Apple stuff entirely, we could talk for ages about the iPhone X, the iPhone X and the iPhone 8. Frankly, I think anyone listening to this show has either A, heard this already, or B, had enough of us talking about it. So we'll probably save our conversations for when Ian and I have actually had a chance to use it. But I did wanted to just get, you know, your very first thoughts in brief. in relation to the fact that it's going to cost £1,000 in Britain compared to $1,000 in the US. Although now, the US is minus tax, of course, but still.
Yes. And so what sort of tax are we looking at on most places? Because you don't pay sales tax, do you, on internet purchases? Is that right?
I think it depends which state you're buying it from or in.
Okay.
But maybe one of our US listeners could write in and let us know
how
that works.
I know you do in New York. I know if you buy something online in New York, you have to pay sales tax on it.
But £1,000, this has got to be, you know, aside from the likes of Vertu phones, in fact, they've actually closed down their manufacturing in this country. I heard Tom Merritt on Daily Tech News talking about that.
All right.
Back in the day.
Here's the thing, right? Let me give you an example, okay? I'm writing an article. It'll be up by the time people hear this podcast.
I've told you not to write articles while we do the podcast.
Well, no.
It's very distracting.
I'm very good at doing two things at once. Okay, so the article goes like this. I remember when I was a kid and all I wanted was a video camera. Like, yeah. I always wanted to be a camera operator. That was like my dream job.
This is a great headline.
So I did really well. Yeah, this is exactly the headline as well. It's got all sorts of ers and ums in it as well. Anyway, but camcorders were really expensive. And I was looking at the specs for the iPhone X10. Got to stop calling it the X. God. iPhone 10. And I noticed that it shoots 1080p at something crazy like 240 frames a second for slow-mo.
Yeah, and it does 4K at
60. 60p. Yeah. So immediately on 4K, you can slow that down for 30p and you can get a 50% slow-mo, which is quite good. Mm. And it certainly gives you a nice dramatic look if you're trying to get it. But, you know, you're still able to shoot at 4K. Right, to get a camcorder or, a proper piece of equipment to shoot that, you would be spending loads more than that kind of money. And that is one feature of a phone. Now, look. I'm not going to pretend it's cheap, but phones have been made very accessible to us. None of us buys them up front. Usually we pay monthly. We know it's expensive, but we're paying essentially for a group of facilities that otherwise would be bulky equipment and cost a lot of money.
Well, let me throw one thing out to you. When I was a child, I believe my parents rented a video camera.
Mm.
Because they wanted to film, a bit personal this, but they wanted to film a lot of...
Oh, God almighty, what are you going to say?
Oh, don't worry, it's a lot less funny. When my dad found out he was going to die because he had cancer, they rented a video camera because they're very expensive to buy in order to film a lot of the time that we had with my brother and I with my dad. We also rented our TV. You know, we rented quite a lot.
Yeah, and you did until... It was actually not possible to rent a TV anymore. You were still renting TVs, weren't you?
It was more out of laziness than anything else.
Sure, but I remember you had that Philips TV, didn't you? And it was a rental.
God, yeah. I mean, I had that was back about 2008 or something. But yes, I did. But I'm supporting your argument in that, you know, we did rent a lot of these things in the past to have access to them. And what you're saying is that we're still renting them in a sense with a contract, but it's all one device.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my job to defend Apple and its pricing structure. I do think it's too expensive. I think that Apple, I mean, on this phone, it'll probably be a little bit like the Galaxy S6. When they released that phone with curved edges, they didn't really want to sell a lot of them because it wasn't a big profit center for them. It was expensive to make. It required a lot of extra equipment. Now, obviously, as time has gone on, and as the S7 came out and the S8, it has got significantly cheaper to build those phones because of the experience they've gathered. You could say that Apple didn't have to charge that much extra, because ultimately it could subsidize it a little bit. It could just take a little bit off its profit. But at the same time, you know, it's a business. Like, businesses are about making profit, and people will pay it.
And the belief is that this £1,000 phone is going to be the catalyst to Apple becoming the first company worth $1 trillion.
And I'm sure we'll see that. But I don't necessarily have a problem with it. I do sort of wonder about what Apple is really up to with all that money. I mean, what's the point of just amassing money, especially as it doesn't tend to do, you know, it's not a company that's heavily investing in new things all the time. And we
I would argue that it very much is massively investing in stuff all the time. But sure. Also, don't forget,
but it
that
still has,
there are dividends
it?
That it pays investors and things like that.
But that's none of that's the point. That you're absolutely right. And of course, that's true. But they still have amassed some, what is it, $200 billion?
Well over.
In the bank, and this
most
is not
off,
money.
Most of it offshore, outside of the US, because sure. They don't want to repatriate it. But
no,
you know, that's a separate conversation.
It sure is. But you know that. But all I'm saying is, really, you know, they could take a little hit on it. They could have made it a little bit more affordable. But ultimately, why should they? People will pay it. I'm just remembering that line from Jurassic Park. I assume it's in the film. It might not be. But certainly in the book is about, you know, like having coupon days and stuff like that for Jurassic Park. So, you know, we can charge anything we want and people will pay it.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is that you have to maintain a premium. The fact is they're releasing the iPhone 8, which is already, you know, a decent upgrade over the iPhone 7. And that's already the top end premium phone. So they've got to price something even higher to keep that kind of luxury, you know, be the guy in the pub that's got the iPhone 10. And that that comes with a couple of hundred pounds extra in premium for the willy waving. So let us know what you think. I'm broadly with Ian on this one, although personally, you know, until I've used an iPhone 10, I'm withholding my judgment as to whether I'd put down the money, partly because the iPhone 7 is so good, and that means iPhone 8 is going to be bloody brilliant. And so the iPhone 10 as a first gen with new untested tech, you know, I don't know if I'm that brave as an early adopter to buy one. Although I did with the thin MacBook, you know, I bought one of those.
Yeah.
You know,
that worked out really well, didn't it?
It did, and I should have waited because the second one had a much better keyboard and a faster processor. But hey ho.
Well, yeah, but you say that, but it didn't really affect your enjoyment of the product, did it? Like, I mean, the next one will always be quicker.
Yeah, the new one is. My friend Lexi, I advised her buy one of those instead of the MacBook Air, and she adores it. But it's got an i3 processor, which, you know, mine's got an old Core M
Atom.
First gen Core M. The Atoms, they're more of a netbook thing, aren't they? Very, very cheap tablet machine.
And that you get them in NAS drives a lot. Yeah, they're not really designed for that, are they?
Low power stuff. Anyway, let us know anything you think about any of the stuff we've talked about today. Obviously, all thoughts are welcome. podcast@natelangson.com. I'm dedicating this next section to Carl Pilkington, and for that reason, I will call this new section "Chimpanzee That Monkey News."
I remember that podcast. As Ricky Gervais went on, he got more and more cross about the whole thing, and the sting got angrier and angrier, didn't it?
It really did. I'm saving everybody's ears by not doing a direct impersonation, but for those of you who get the reference, you're welcome. This is the news, though, of course, that a Welsh photographer this week settled a two-year battle with the animal rights group PETA over this quote-unquote monkey selfie. This was according to the BBC and others this week. This was the case of Naruto, the macaque monkey. He took a picture in a jungle in Indonesia in 2011 with a camera owned by David Slater, who's a photographer from Monmouthshire in Wales. And the argument was, says PETA, who mounted this lawsuit in the US against the Welsh guy, that the monkey owned the copyright and therefore was entitled to the royalties that were being made off Slater's promotion of the image and sale of the image. That was quite a controversial claim. Certainly there was no claim settled like that in the past. And so it rattled on for 2 years. The US judges said, because they've ruled this now, that the copyright protection couldn't be applied to the monkey. It couldn't. So they were basically doing this on the monkey's behalf. And the result was that Slater has agreed to donate 25% of any future cash that he makes from the picture to registered charities that, quote, are dedicated to protecting the welfare or habitat of Naruto. You know, I mean, Slater had said that he'd put a lot of effort in, which was more than enough for his claim to copyright. But, you know, I don't actually like this lawsuit, but I can at least where PETA came from in that.
Technically,
Slater didn't take the picture. If I lent you my camera and you took a picture, I don't own your photo.
That's absolute nonsense. An animal can't own a copyright on anything. It's just stupid. It's the continuing effort to, you know, for particularly PETA, an organisation that should be concentrating on saving animals rather than just constantly launching lawsuits against people and, in the words of David Slater, essentially ruin his life. I mean, the man nearly gave up photography because of this lawsuit. And it just, it's classic bullying. They wanted to administer the fund on the monkey's behalf, didn't they? You know, I mean, this is, I don't see how that is going to benefit the monkey. The only way you could say, okay, so here's the plan, right? The monkey took the photo. Monkeys don't really need money because they're, you know, monkeys. So instead, why don't we simply buy him as many bananas as he wants? Like, he can have infinite bananas. And then that would be a, you know, perhaps a justifiable use of the money, but not giving it to PETA to administer. I read early on in this lawsuit that apparently this photo that, that Slater is responsible for, has done more to secure the future of these monkeys than anything anyone else had done before. They were on the verge of extinction, and this photo has done so much to raise awareness of the monkey that it's actually probably done an enormous amount of good. And PETA are just the worst. They really are. I have no time for lawsuits like this. It was bullying, plain and simple, and I am amazed it took this long. If I was him, I'd have gone after them for money, some sort of huge settlement. And there's a lot of great reasons to be, you know, a vegetarian or a vegan. These are all sort of things that PETA champions. But unfortunately, they do it in such an objectionable way the whole time that they really do make themselves. They have given themselves less impact. You know, if you want to look after animals, find a good charity, donate some money. They'll be very grateful for it. PETA is a waste of space.
Well, moving back into a bit of telecoms news, Vodafone is looking at investing in the laying out of ultra-fast full fibre broadband connections to homes and businesses in Britain if it can find partners to share some of the costs. Now, this is according to a top executive speaking to Reuters on Wednesday this week. Vodafone UK's CEO, Nick Jeffery, had said that he had the capital available to make such an investment in Britain, which is very, very exciting because at the moment, Britain's broadband infrastructure outside of the likes of sort of CityFibre and Virgin is dominated by Openreach, which is, you know, it's owned by BT, but run as a separate business as of this year. And that provides a lot of the connections to Vodafone, as well as BT, and also its competitors like TalkTalk and Sky and others. So if Vodafone could do this, it would set them up very much as a not only as a big competitor to Virgin Media, but also potentially as a big competitor to Openreach and BT, while simultaneously being able to really bolster, I think, its sort of quad play packages of home phone. And I mean, we don't know if it's going to do TV, do we? It's not really a quad play, I suppose, but certainly they have a lot of video sort of services that they could roll out with this. So it's quite exciting, I believe, certainly from a competitive standpoint.
Well, it is, but I mean, there's constant rumours, aren't there, that that Vodafone will. It's a complicated story, but there's a deal that was supposed to happen where Vodafone would sell its UK and European operations to Liberty Media, who owns Virgin Media, and then something like, and then but Vodafone would keep some obscure part of its network and buy Virgin Media. It's very confusing. When I've read the news about it, I was like, what? But anyway, this sort of does position them more as a competitor for Virgin, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Absolutely. You know, full fibre is very much going to compete with Virgin if they can match the speeds, because at the moment Openreach doesn't come close to matching the kind of speeds that Virgin does. You know, I've got 390 megabits per second in my house now. You know, BT doesn't come anywhere near that whatsoever.
No.
And
but BT doesn't come near that almost through choice. Like, BT's never set out to be the fastest broadband provider. They probably could deliver. They could deliver at least 300, I think, to most people who have are within reach of a cabinet. but they just sort of don't seem to feel that's the best
business
model for
them. I'm just
not
sure they could without laying out a lot of extensive infrastructure that they don't use right now, because Virgin, although it's not fibre to the premises, it's fibre to the cabinet and then coaxial into the premises, whereas if BT did it, they'd have to use copper.
Sure, but I mean,
from the cabinet to the house, I just don't.
Yeah, but BT's street cabinets tend to be much more numerous than Virgin's, and BT's system doesn't rely on customers sharing the coax from the house to the cabinet, which Virgin's does, and that causes a lot of problems, because actually you can have quite bad street level congestion on Virgin. Because if a lot of people on your street have Virgin, say up to 300 megs, if they're all downloading full speed at the same time, they can congest the line quite badly.
If they have never ever experienced it in 7 years.
And you probably wouldn't, because I think the bandwidth on those coax is quite high. But it certainly has in the past been a problem. I remember having conversations with Virgin years ago about stuff like this. But anyway, I suppose the point is that it is probably becoming a little bit more affordable now, and especially with the Openreach being spun out as a different company and the rules changing quite substantially, it would, I think, possibly even be possible now to use BT's overhead lines for getting fiber optic to people's houses, which might make it a bit more affordable. That's how the Americans do it. We've never done it like that in this country.
I mean, certainly there's proof that Vodafone is putting its money where its mouth is, because it's going to spend €2 billion it's already committed to doing on full fiber connections in Germany. And I believe it wants to do them in other European. I want to say France and Spain as well, but certainly it's already been announced that they're going to do this in Germany. So I believe it's part of quite a wide European strategy to really be a player in the fiber space, which is really good news for me as a Vodafone customer.
It would also be really good to have someone that isn't Virgin offering a cabled service that would certainly help to drive down those ridiculous prices.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to leave it there, I think, for this week. We've covered quite a lot. We're looking forward to being back, on our now weekly basis. So do start the emails coming back into us, podcast@nateslangson.com. Obviously, you can check us out on Twitter @textmessagepod. That is where we post through the week all the stories that we might discuss on the following week's show. Certainly, you can tweet stuff at us that you would like us to discuss. We also, we reply to people on there, and we sometimes fold those conversations into the show. So please do that as well. And obviously, if you're not yet a Patreon supporter, and thank you to those of you who are, then now is a great time to maybe give us a chance. We had a really good chat this week on the Patreon, the extended version, about Samsung's Galaxy Note 8 rebates being a lot better for the US than it certainly is for us in the UK. We also had a really nice chat about the ideas behind location tracking with your loved ones, not just kids, but your partners, and why that might be useful. Plus, there's a lot more other stuff that we've kept in there. But do check us out if you want. There's no commitment. Patreon.com/UKTech. We did have a few people leave us over the break, which was a little bit depressing, but understandable. But what did bug me is a couple of people in their exit survey had said that they were unhappy because they'd signed up and never got any episodes through the feed, despite the fact that it was pretty clear on the post that we were on a break and there were no episodes going out on the free feed either. So I'm really not quite sure what people were getting at.
And no one was charged. I mean, we could have gone for a monthly fee, couldn't we? And then take 2 months off. That would have been a bit of a cheat.
That's exactly why we didn't do monthly.
And I like the idea of people only paying when we deliver, because that means that first of all there's a little reward for delivering when we do it, but also it means we don't have to obsess about doing a show every week and feel the terrible crushing guilt of missing a week, because I just couldn't live with that, honestly.
No, neither could I, and that's the reason we do it the way we do it. So nobody was charged for anything while we were off. So if any of you are listening and were a Patreon subscriber or something, do come back, do give us a try. We do try try and do a lot there. We have a few tiers as well. We have our unedited raw feed, which this week is well over an hour of content. If you want that. Anyway,
but why the hell would you?
Well, some people do, and they can tell us.
No, they do, and we love them because
we do indeed. That'll do for us for this week. Thank you. See you in a week.